Welcome, horns. Hi, my name is Karen Maloney, and I'm a very blessed Al-Anon. And my home group is Lake Whitney, Texas, which happens to be the AA capital of the world, where humility is their primary goal. They miss that last part sometimes. But anyway, however, I do live in Columbus, Ohio today, or a suburb. It says Ohio back there. It says Orient, but that's only a post office. And it's 18 miles from our house. There's two other post offices closer, but, you know, it's government. What can I say? But anyway, I'm so honored to be here, to be asked, to be in a room of alcoholic women. I'm not a double winner. What am I talking about? I am a big book Al-Anon. That's what I was about to say. And this big book is really very special to me because it's a big book that Bob Azzanz gave my husband many, many years ago. And my husband passed away a year and a half ago. And Bob did part of the eulogy when he passed. And so anyway, it's really special, and I always carry it with me now. And I love those guys. I love those guys. I love alcoholics. That's why I'm here, is because I love alcoholics. I mean, if alcohol had done for me what it did for you, I wouldn't be standing up here in the Al-Anon spot. But the scary part is that I don't know that I would have made it to the other side. You know, I really, really don't. So I want to thank, thank you for coming up with Alcoholics Anonymous so that the people who had living problems with the alcoholics, and I had living problems long before I ever met my first alcoholic. I was born a pre-Al-Anon. But anyway, I have always loved them because you always had more fun than we did. And, you know, and I just couldn't keep up. Because I'd go to sleep after one drink. I mean, I was just a wimp. That's all there is to it. I want to thank Polly and Lee and the committee for asking me. I think the weekend that Polly asked me to do this, we were staying with them. And we were there for a few days, and Don got sick the first night, and we had to take him to Mayo Clinic, and he was there for a week. And we had our grandson with us. And they adopted Tony. I mean, they just adopted him because, you know, I was at the hospital most of the time, and as was Polly a lot of the time. And so he adores Dave and Polly. And so when I told him I was going to come and see Polly, he said, "Well, where's Dave?" And I said, "Well, he's going to stay home." "Well, why would Dave stay home?" I mean, he just couldn't conceive that they are not always together, you know, and they're not always together a lot because she's there and he's here. So anyway, it's so exciting to be here. And I have to tell you that my heart is beating at about 20 million decibels after Katie. So I'm up here, my heart is, and I'm trying to get it back into my body, you know. It's like I live in Yankee land now, and they talk faster than I can hear. And Katie's a Texan, but she talks like a Yankee. I mean, she's like listening to a 45 on a 78 or 78 on a 45. I never got all that straight. I mean, you really have to pay attention to get it, you know. And we've known each other for a good long while, she and Charlie. And we love and adore them. We love and adore them. And Marty, well, my best friend, and she's singing at our Texas Woman to Woman Conference. And they put on quite a show, I might say. And so we've known each other from woman to woman for a long, long time. And there are women here from Georgia that used to come to our Texas Woman to Woman. And if you haven't, I'd invite you to come. It's always the first weekend of April. And it is a conference of AA and Al-Anon women. And it's bridging the gap between the two, you know. And it's a wonderful conference. And we have workshops and speakers. And And for every workshop, we have an AA leader and an Al-Anon leader. And it's a wonderful blending. It is so. And so many of the people that I go to meetings with today are double winners, or whatever you want to call yourselves. You know, if you're in a relationship, and you are, whether you know it or not, it may only be with your dog. By the way, mine is right here in the bag. So if you see PJ Maloney, this prissy little thing walking around this weekend, this little papillon, he is my service dog. He's a cardiac alert service dog. And so wherever I go, he goes. And but he's in a bag right now, and he's just as happy to be in that bag as he is if he were sitting up right up here on the stage, which he is. But anyway, they say that when we're asked to share our story, that we're asked to share what it was like and what happened and what I'm like today, or what I think I'm like. If you had heard my story some 33 years ago, it would have sounded very different than it will today. And I don't know where my voice is, so we'll just go with it. This is all we've got. And I guess I was up here talking with Katie. And but anyway, I would have said it was his fault. And if he had quit drinking, our marriage would have made it. And we would have lived happily ever after. And it would have been in Wonderland. But the fact is, he didn't quit drinking. I was the crazy one in the house. You know, if you had said to somebody that was walking by, go peek in the window of that house over there, and you just listen for a few minutes, and then you tell us which one is the alcoholic. All he wanted to do was drink, and I was the raving bitch in the kitchen, and I wasn't cooking. And they would have said, oh, there's no doubt, it's her. You know, because Larry just wanted to be left alone. He went to work in the morning, practiced medicine, came home, drank before he went to work, and he just wanted to go to bed and be left alone, you know. And I wanted him to do something and have fun and, you know, and all this kind of stuff, and he didn't. And when I would hear that pop top on that beer or that paper, do they still have a little paper thing on a whiskey bottle? I could hear it a block away when he would open it, that Jack Daniels, Black Label, you know. And I'm hearing, I thought only guys drank it. I didn't know that. But, you know, what do I know? I didn't know there were alcoholic women either. So, you know, I didn't know anything about alcohol. I grew up in a house that was, my parents were 30, my mother was 35 and my dad was 41 when I was born, and I'm an only child. And I'm 68 years old. And back then, you did not have children that late. You know, that was really old to have your first and only child. And if you don't have kids, you run around with couples that don't have kids. And if you have a family, you run around with other couples that have families. And so they ran around with this group of couples. None of them had any children. And then all of a sudden, Karen bounces in one day. And I was a complete surprise to everybody. And so all of a sudden, I am the baby of this group. You know, and I'm just rotten, I guess. You know, they gave me everything that I wanted. And if mother and daddy, you know, I went first to mother. And if she said no, I'd go to daddy. And if daddy said no, I'd go to Uncle Rube. And if he said no, I went to Aunt Alva. None of these were aunts or uncles. They were just, I just called them that, you know, because that's what they told me. And, but anyway, I hated it. I just hated it. I hear the alcoholic talk about they didn't fit as a kid. Well, I didn't fit like the Quitney. It's a tiny little town. They were building the lake when I was a little kid. And so it was just Whitney. It's still not even called Lake. I mean, the name of it is still just Whitney. And there's 1,800 people that live in the city limits. Now there's about 45,000 people that live around the lake. But they aren't included in the city limits. And the city limits has not changed since the day I was born. It is still just in that square. Because those old timers don't want those late people you know, they don't know they're the ones that support that little town. But anyway, you know, but I didn't fit it. We lived on a house where old people lived, I thought, because nobody had kids that lived on our street. You know, but we had big trees and things like that. I wanted to live in one of those new neighborhoods where all the houses sort of looked alike and all the kids rode their bicycles in the street. Nobody, you know, drove fast or anything. They didn't drive fast on our street either, but I didn't have anybody to play with. And so I'd try to go over there. And my mother drove a Chevrolet and I wanted her to drive a Mercedes. And, you know, and my parents were farmers and ranchers. And so sometimes we lived in town and sometimes we lived at the ranch. And I didn't like that. I didn't fit. I wanted to be in the city. I wanted the shiny lights and all the dazzle and the glitz and all this kind of stuff. And finally I got it. But I was out of high school at 16 and I went off to the University of Texas. Now when you graduate from a tiny school like I had gone to, and then you go to University of Texas, it's a little bit of a shock. Plus, I'm 16. I look like I'm 12. I was built like this. I had no anything. So I look like somebody's little sister in class. At 19, I'm out of school. But before I went, my daddy had a talk with me. Now, I worshipped my daddy. Mother was a Grinch. But, you know, mothers are. Somebody has to be the disciplinarian, and she was. And so that's just the way it was. But I had my daddy wrapped around my little finger. And so anyway, but daddy said to me, he said, Precious, because that's what they call me. He said, there are three men that we don't want you to date when you go off to school. And I knew he was the smartest man in the world, but I didn't know he was psychic. I thought, how's he going to know who I'm going to meet, you know? And I said, well, who are they? I thought he was going to give me names. And he said, well, we don't want you to date anybody that's in the military because Uncle Sam is going to move them one day. And what would we do without our baby girl? And I said, I don't know. Well, that made sense. And he said, and we sure don't want you to date a Catholic. We didn't even have a Catholic church in our town. And he said, because they pray to Mary and worship idols. And I said, oh, okay. We were so Baptist. And I didn't like it. But if the church doors were open, my mother and daddy were there, and so was I, playing the piano. And from the time I was 14, I was the church pianist. And I didn't like doing that either, but I did it. And he said, we don't want you to date a Yankee. Now, that could have been anybody north of Dallas. You know, bottom line is he just didn't want me to go too far. Austin was 130 miles south, but he figured, you know, as far as I could go was the border. I mean, he wouldn't think that I could possibly get across the border. So south was okay. The Yankees were not okay. And so if mother had given me those little things, I could have found in my freshman year, but it took me until my last year. And is anybody here single? Singles? Oh, my God. Look at you. Let me tell you, don't ever go on a blind date. He might be alcoholic. And I don't mean sober. I mean drinking, you know, using. Or he could be using, period. He could be using other things, too. They weren't much using those days. It was pretty much just alcohol. And I'd never seen alcohol in my home. My parents had never taken a drink in front of me. I take that back. My daddy had kidney stones. And the doctor had told him that in the summer, when he would come in from the ranch, and it was hot, that he should drink one cold beer. And what he would do, only in the summer, when it was hot, he would, before he left the house that morning, he would take this beer, and he would put it in the top of the back of the refrigerator where I couldn't see it. And then when he would come home, he would sit on this little back porch thing we have. Some of you guys might call them mud rooms, you know. And he sat on this little bitty chair that I had when I was about four. But it was metal, and he would sit on it, and he would put this beer under between his, you know, under the seat of it in case I happened to walk by. He didn't want me to see it, you know. I mean, he was drinking it for medicinal purposes, you know, but God forbid that that baby girl should see my daddy take a drink. And then when winter came, the beer went away. So that was, you know, I didn't even know what it was about. I didn't care what it was about. But when I got to school, there was drinking, and it was fun. And so I remember the first party that I went to, and they offered me a drink. Well, I'm 16, you know, and I never had a fake ID or any of those things, you know. I was just pretty sheltered and sort of stayed that way. Sort of, just the sort of part. And so I took a drink. And nobody said, now this is your first drink, and so just drink it slowly and just kind of nurse it. It was a mixed drink. And I did. And by the time I think it was finished, I was really sleepy. And I said to my date, would you mind to take me back to the dorm? And he looked at me like, you know, I had three heads, and he went, well, we haven't been here but about 30 minutes, you know. I said, I know, but I'm not feeling very well, and I have a really bad headache. And he said, okay. And so he took me back to the dorm. And my roommate was there, and I went to bed. I went right through and went to bed, and all of a sudden, Austin, Texas started having an earthquake. They'd never had an earthquake. And I said to my roommate, oh, my God, we've got to get out of here. And she said, what's wrong? And I said, we're having an earthquake. She said, how do you know we're having an earthquake? And I said, the whole house is just going in circles. And she said, oh, hell, you've had too much to drink. She said, how many drinks did you have? And I went, almost one. And she said, put one foot on the floor. Now, see, if you girls had done that, y'all could have drank a little longer. You could have stayed out there a little bit longer. You know, and I put my foot on the floor, and the earthquake stopped. The bed stopped. But the next morning when I got up, I called her in there, and I said, oh, Nelda, come quick. And she said, what's wrong? And I said, look at my head. And she said, what's wrong with it? And I said, feel of it. And it felt like it was out to here, and I put my hands like this, and I could feel my head. And she went, what are you talking about? And I said, look at me. It's like Humpty Dumpty. And she went in and got a mirror, and she put it in front of me, and she went, see, nothing is wrong with your head. Get your ass up. You've got class. And, you know, and I went, oh. And it wasn't like that. It was like this, but it felt like it was like this. And I said, what in the world happened? And she said, I don't think you and alcohol are going to be very good roomies. She said, I think you might want to stay away from it or try something different anyway. And she said, you weren't gone an hour. She said, whatever you drank, you probably drank a little fast. So you might want to slow it down or maybe just not drink. She said, ask for a 7-Up. They'll put it in a wine glass. You'll be fine. You know, and that's pretty much what I did. But, you know, then I got to where I could handle a little rum and coke, big stuff. And I liked the ones that were, pretty. I liked daiquiris, frozen daiquiris. Those were pretty. And I could nurse that all night long, and then I could make the party, you know. And then I didn't have to come home with that hangover, and my head didn't have to be that big and all that kind of stuff. But the people that were there were so exciting, and you were so much more fun than the people at Lake Whitney. And, you know, and I just absolutely loved it. I just absolutely loved it. But back to the blind date. I was home. It was my last year of school, and I was going to enter law school in the fall. And so it was at Christmas time, and one of my friends that I had gone to school with was in the Air Force. And he happened to be stationed at Carswell Air Force Base, which was in Fort Worth, Texas. And he was in, and sometimes when we'd both be home at the same time and I'd bring a girlfriend home, I'd call him and I'd say, "Jerry, I've got a girlfriend home with me this weekend. Would you like to go out with her? And we'll have fun. I have a date. Would you like to have a date with her?" And he'd say, "Sure," you know, if he didn't have a date. And sometimes if he did, he'd say, "What does she look like?" And I'd tell him, and he'd say, "I'll break mine." And so, you know, and so he called and he said, "Listen," he said, "I've got my roommate here." And he said, "He saw a picture of you. And we're all going to go to Waco tonight and have a lot of fun." He said, "Why don't you come go with us?" And I said, "Well, Jerry, I have a date." And he said, "Well, who is it? Who's with? And I told him it was a friend from Hillsboro, which was just 12 miles away. And he went to UT also. And, you know, in school, I wouldn't have dated him for anything when we were, you know, living at home. But you change a little when you go off to school, and hopefully. And so he said, "Well, I'll take care of that." And so in about 15 minutes, he calls me back, and he said, "You don't have a date tonight." He said, "You're going to go with my roommate." And I went, "Well, what did you tell Jimmy?" He said, "I just told him something came up." I said, "Oh, well, okay." I thought, it'll be a little embarrassing when I see him at school, you know, next time. But anyway, so he had broken my date. I have no idea what he told him. And so I am all ready at the time I'm supposed to be ready, and they're late. Well, you don't pick up my daddy's daughter late. It just doesn't happen. And I already knew that I was going to spend the night with Jerry's sister because I knew we wouldn't be home by midnight. And my daddy thought there was nothing going on past midnight in Whitney, Texas, that his daughter needed to be involved with. So it didn't matter that I was a senior in college. I still had to be in by midnight if I was home, right? And so they finally got there, and they picked everybody else up. It's a whole big group going, and it'll be okay. And so I got Daddy all settled down. And so they came, and he liked Jerry, and my parents were friends of his parents and stuff. And so they came to the door and introduced themselves to my parents and the whole thing. And we get into the car. Now, we are in a 64 Ford Falcon. Now, a lot of you young ladies in here weren't born then, and a lot of you don't even know what that looks like. But it looks like one of the little cars today. If you went to rent a car, it would be that, what do you call that, the economy car. That's right. And it would be like that. The thing is that there were 8 of us in it. So it was a little tight. However, I was thin in those days. I know that's hard to believe, but anyway, I grew up skinny as a rail, and most of us were at that time. And so anyway, here we are. We're all like this, you know. And Larry, my date, knows everybody in the car but me. I know everybody in the car but him. And so, you know, we're sort of trying to visit a little, and it's hard with 8 people in a car and you know. And he said, "Well, what do you do?" And I said, "Well, I go to school." And he said, "Well, where?" And I said, "UT." And he said, "Well, what's that?" Now, we're in Texas. Well, we think about intelligence, you know. And so I said, "Well, it's the University of Texas." And he said, "Oh, well, where is that?" And I said, "It's in Austin." He said, "Oh." He said, "Well, what are you majoring in?" And I said, "Well, business administration and English." And I said, "But I'm entering law school in the fall." And he said, "Well, don't you think you ought to learn to speak the language a little before you think you're going to be able to help people?" He was making fun of the way I talked. He thought I had an accent. And, you know, I had just one flash. "I bet you're a Yankee." I mean, it just went, ding. And then I said, "Well, I know you're in the Air Force. Where are you from?" And he said, "Columbus, Ohio." And then, you know, just the waves and Castle Lake. But I didn't ask. And it just... And it never came up again, you know. And so I was a little scared because I thought he was going to get up on the floor and do some crazy Yankee dance. And he thought I was going to get up and do some country and western something or, you know, those roundabout dances things. And square dancing or something. And so we were sort of afraid to get on the floor with each other. But finally he said, "Would you like to dance?" And I said, "Yes." And that was it. He was a great dancer. I liked to dance. We danced all night, every dance. And I think it was 3 a.m. when we stopped talking. You know, it was just, and he was exciting, and he was very, he had the IQ of a genius. I didn't know, he didn't tell me that, but later I found that one out. But, I mean, I could tell that he was smart, and he was good looking, and he was a great dancer and a lot of fun. And I thought, "God, he's hot." Only we didn't use that word hot then. I'm not sure what we used, but it wasn't hot. But he was. And so I finished out school, and he was in the Air Force, and he was going to go to medical school. And here I am going to go to law school. And medical school and law school weren't in the same place because he was going to go to Southwestern Medical School in Dallas, or Baylor Medical School, excuse me, in Dallas, I guess. And so he was going to be in Dallas, and I was going to be in Austin. And it just wasn't going to quite work, but we fell madly in love, just madly in love. And I'd never been madly in love. I'd been in love. I'd said, "I love you," but, you know, who hadn't? And after about 4 kisses, "Oh, I love you. I love you too." You know, my life was about to change, but little did I know that. And then the thing did come up about him being Catholic and me being Baptist. And so his father told his mother that they would not come to the wedding because he was not marrying a Catholic. And she had never stood up to that man. And he was the oldest of 8 kids, and I'm an only child. And he's a Yankee, and I'm a Southerner. I mean, we had a lot of differences. And so she said to him, "The children and I are going to Texas to my son's wedding. Now, Josiah, if you want to be a whatever and stay home, you may. But I would imagine that that would draw a really big wedge between you and your son. But I am not about to let anything stop me from being at my son's wedding." And he was the oldest. And he came unwilling, very unwilling, but he came. And we were going to have a garden wedding. So that was going to make it easier. You know, the wedding was in June. And so if it was going to be in our garden, in our backyard, and so that was going to take off the heat of the Baptist church kind of thing, you know. But it rained. And so it had to be at the church. And he had a movie camera. And he was 2 feet in front of my face as I walked down that aisle. And I thought, "I don't think I like that man." And then the first time that we went to Ohio that I recall, I remember him wanting to take me out and introduce me to some of their friends. And he asked me point blank, he said, "How does it feel to know that if your husband should die today, that you would send him to hell?" And I looked at him and I said, "I didn't know anybody could be so narrow-minded. But I would like for you to stop the car and let me out." Now, I'm in Columbus, Ohio. I've only been there once, and that was before the wedding when I went to meet him, you know. And I said, "Just stop the car and let me out." He said, "You don't know where you are." And I said, "I'll find my way home." But he said, "I'll be glad to take you home." And he took me home, and I went running up the stairs. And Larry just happened to be, he saw me just run in the house, and he came up, and I told him what happened. And he said, "We're leaving." So we were upstairs packing our bags, and his mom came up, and she said, "Please, please, please, please don't do this." She said, "This is not the way we want this to start." And she said, "I will have a talk with him, and I assure you that he will apologize." And he did. But, you know, there's an apology and then there's an apology, and we know the difference. Went on the first column when I finally got to the program. It was right at the top. And it was a lot of years later. But anyway, we were married for 15 years. We were, we have a wonderful son, Walter. And the love of, he was just the love in, of my life. He was everything any mother ever wanted him to be. Although I wanted a little girl. And I didn't know, because I didn't know what to do with the little boy. Because I just knew I was going to put her in bows and all these cute shoes. And he didn't want bows or cute shoes. You know, he didn't even like little golf shirts and white shorts. And, you know, the way I dressed him. But he was the cutest thing around, I'll tell you for sure. And anyway, that marriage lasted for 15 years. It became an alcoholic marriage. He didn't drink that much when we first got married. He was in school, but he drank. But I didn't notice it because I was working and going to school too, and taking some courses and here and there, and you know, I didn't see it. And you know, we know it's a progressive disease. And then he went into the private practice. I failed to mention that he was a veterinarian. And so his patients loved him. But his clients, after some time, would sometimes smell whiskey on his breath. And he was in the Air Force, he was in private practice in Texas, in Marlin, Texas, and there was this huge outbreak of anthrax, and he was the one that had diagnosed it. And all of a sudden, the market just went straight. All the ranchers in the area were just devastated. And he was to have been the small animal vet. Our partner was to be the large animal vet, but it happened that the ranchers didn't like the other vet. They wanted Larry. You know, he was German and would drink with them, and, you know, and Keith was sort of quiet, and it just didn't work out that way. And the National Guard came in, and it was a really big deal, and he saw those uniforms, and he knew what was going to happen to the market, and he came home one afternoon, and he said, "How would you feel if I said, would you like to go back into the Air Force, the military?" And I'd loved the military when we were in it. And I said, "Oh, I think it would be exciting, you know." And he told me why and all this kind of stuff. And we looked at things, and we decided to do that. And so we went back into the military. And he was in that and was very successful at it. And we got to go to some wonderful places. And I'm so sorry. And we got to live in Italy. We lived just right out of Venice, and that was one of my wonderful dream places. We were about 30 minutes outside of it, and life was pretty good, except he drank too much. And then one day his hospital commander came to me, and he said, "Karen, you need to talk to Larry." And he was one of our very best friends. We played bridge with him a couple of nights a week. She was one of my best friends. And he said, "You need to talk to Larry about his drinking." And I said, "I've been talking to him for almost 15 years about his drinking. If you want him to be talked to, you'll need to talk to him." And so they had a program where they would send the people for treatment. And it was a fairly new program. And he declined that offer. He said no, he would resign his commission, that he would get out of the Air Force. And so by that time, our marriage had probably been over for quite some time. You know, he really lived in one end of the house and I lived in the other. But we had a family. And we were doing it, I guess when I look back, we did it because we were committed to each other. You know, it was till death do us part. But you see, when he drank, I would go crazy. And there was one day that I pulled a 45 on him because I couldn't stand it anymore. I couldn't stand what it was doing to me. And I didn't think about what it was doing to him. But I knew that I couldn't stand it anymore. And I couldn't go home and say I'd gotten a divorce, because that would have been failure. And that wasn't acceptable. And so I pulled that gun on him. But he had cleaned it the night before. And he had failed to put the bullets back in it. And I think that he thought it was loaded. And I thought it was loaded. You would have a different speaker had it been loaded. And then there was the day that he says that I took a butcher knife. And I remember me talking to him with the butcher knife. But after that divorce was over, we had separated and all that kind of stuff. We'd already separated. But he said to me, he said, let's not get the divorce until I get out of the military, because you'll lose all your benefits. And, you know, we were more roommates than anything, you know. And I had decided to move back to Whitney, because when all else fails, you go home to mom and dad. And they always say, come home. And they owned the house that was next door to them. That was a little rent house. And we remodeled it. And it was an older house. And they redid the floors and all that. And Walter said you could play anything in the house but marbles. The guy that leveled it didn't do quite such a good job as he said he did. And that guarantee didn't quite work. So we didn't play any marbles in that house. But the day that our divorce, he called me and he said, why don't I pick you up and we'll go over to the courthouse together. And then we'll come back and pick up Walter and I'll go to dinner. And I said, well, that makes sense. And most divorces don't end that way. And I said to him, well, you know, you're going to pick Walter up after school tomorrow anyway, because he has a break. And he was living in Fort Worth, which was an hour and a half away. And I said, so why don't you spend the night at the house and you can just sleep in Walter's room, because there's two twin beds in there. And he said, well, that's a great idea. You know, and so he picks me up and we go to the courthouse, and the judge is a very good friend of my family. And he said, are you sure you kids want to do this? And we said, yes. But on the way to the courthouse, I said to him, are you sure you don't want to try it one more time? And he said, we can't, because somebody's going to get hurt. I think he thought it was him. He was probably right. And we came home and we said to Walter, well, we're going to go to dinner. Let's all go to dinner. And he said, no, I'm playing something. And mom, why don't you just fix dinner here? Well, that was unusual. And so I fixed dinner and my uncle knocked on the door. And we were eating and he came in and we visited for a little bit. One of these uncles that really wasn't an uncle. And he walked next door to my mother and daddy and he said, what do you mean those kids are getting a divorce? They're next door. They're having dinner. And mother said the divorce was final this afternoon, Rube. And he said, I can't believe that. They're just laughing and having a good time, you know. But we always said we would never badmouth the other one. And so if you have children and you're separated or divorced, please try to remember that. Don't talk badly about the other one, because it sticks with them. It stays a long time. And you'll regret it one day. And you'll have to do step work on it. And it'll suck. It wasn't too long after that, a while. I was working as the assistant superintendent. The superintendent of schools had called me one day and he said, I understand that you're living in Whitney. And I said, well, temporarily. And he said, well, I'd like to have lunch with you. And I said, why? And he said, well, I need an assistant superintendent. We've never had one. And I said, I've never had an education course in my life. He said, we have people who have had education courses. I need somebody with some business sense. And he said, half of the people in Whitney have told me to call you and hire you. So I thought maybe we could meet and visit and have lunch. And I said, I'll visit with you. I said, but I'm only going to be here probably until school's out. And he said, well, why don't we just see how it works out and give it a chance? And I said, well, okay. And so we had lunch, and he hired me on the spot. And I don't know what I did, but anyway, it worked. And so that was easy. Well, you know, I was out of school when Walter was out of school. And I had a couple of job offers. I could have gone back to work for NASA, or I could have gone to work for General Dynamics. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I really didn't. NASA would have been going back to A&M. And, you know, and he had gone to school, to vet school at A&M. And I'm a Longhorn. I'd gone to Texas, University of Texas. And they're like this, you know. And so we were okay, except on Thanksgiving Day. And when we played football, and we didn't have very good Thanksgivings at our house. And because we always beat them. And so anyway, it was a little while later, and somebody at school said to me, "How long has it been since you've been to a Whitney homecoming?" And I said, "It's been a long time." And they said, "Well, this is homecoming weekend, and little towns have these things. You know, they have parades, and everybody comes home, and class reunions, and those kind of things." And so they said, "Why don't you go to the football game with us tonight?" And so I said, "Fine." So I got dressed, probably kind of like what I am right now. I forgot that I was going to a Whitney High School football game. And, you know, everybody else was dressed like we use, you know, when we're really pretty casual. And so I ran into an old friend at the halftime, and she said, "Do you own a pair of jeans?" And I said, "You know, I bought a pair today." And I had, at lunch that day, I had bought a pair of jeans. Now, my parents were farmers and ranchers, and it was the first pair of blue jeans I had ever owned in my life. We didn't wear jeans when I was growing up. We just didn't. And I don't know what we wore, but we didn't wear blue jeans. But there was this cute little shop in town, and I had gone out there, and everybody was wearing jeans, and so I bought them. And she said, "Meet me downtown in front of the newspaper office. A bunch of the classes are having reunions. We'll go visit, and you'll get to see a lot of people you haven't seen in years." And I said, "Okay." So I went home, and I put on my jeans and loafers and, you know, Oxford shirt, and here I go to meet her. And I can't get to the newspaper office because the whole downtown, which isn't big, is blocked off because there's a big street dance, and the Chamber of Commerce is putting it on. And so they're at all the corners, you know, and so you pay to go in, and there's a band at each end and all this kind of stuff. And I said to the guy that was at this particular spot that I knew, the postmaster, I said, "I'm going in to meet Mary Beth, and we're leaving." And he said, "Well, don't pay." He said, "Just run meet her, and then y'all go. And if you decide to stay, come back and pay." And I realized that we were going to stay after a little while. And so I said, "Mary Beth, it looks like we're staying. I've got to go pay." And she said, "Fine." And so she said, I'm going to go get a beer out of my car." And then she looked at me and she said the strangest thing. She said, "But I don't guess you want one." And I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, I don't. But why would you say it like that?" And she said, "Well, you never were much fun." I thought I was the belle of the ball. And I thought, I haven't seen you in 15 years. You know, things have changed a little. I remember one night that at the officers club when Larry walked over and the hospital commander and I were dancing on the table. And it was a celebration thing, and the enlisted people couldn't come into the officers club, but the officers could go into the enlisted club. So it was at the enlisted club. And so he walks up to me, to us, to Jess and I, the one that was going to talk to him about his drinking, and said, "Would you two mind to get off of the table?" He said, "How is it going to look when we go into this hospital and take the hospital commander and the veterinarian's wife because they've fallen off the table drunk or drinking and broken their legs or arms or something? It's not going to be a pretty sight. So would you all mind to dance on the dance floor?" So I thought I was a pretty good partier, you know, and I was. I just didn't drink that much. I just, you know, I could have as much fun not drinking as you guys, I thought, could have drinking, you know. And yet I remembered everything the next morning, and I didn't wake up with those headaches and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't know you did either. And so anyway, so I was a little insulted that Mary Beth said that she didn't think I was much fun. But anyway, I walked to her car, and she opened her trunk, and do you know that she had an ice chest in her trunk? A metal ice chest. It was full of ice and cold beer. A woman. I mean, I just didn't get it. I thought, she must be planning on going to a big party and having to bring the beer for everybody, you know? And later I found out, I think that it was permanently there, you know? And she didn't tell me. Anyway, so she gets her beer, and we walk back to the corner, and it's a different corner. And so she said, oh, my goodness, there's one of my dearest friends. She said, I love this guy. She said, he is wonderful. She said, his name is Don Maloney. And she said, he came to Whitney a couple of three years ago, and he has turned this little town around. She said, I mean, he has gotten the downtown looking cute. He gets people working and doing things, and he's got groups going and everything. He is just a moving and shaking guy. And she said, Karen Zier, this is Don Maloney. And we introduced. And he looked at me and he said, you don't look like you're from here. And I didn't know if that was an insult or a compliment at the time. And I said, well, I sort of am and I'm sort of not. I said, I'm here temporarily. And he said, oh, well, me too. And he said, but why are, you know, I said, well, I just have to pay. I just have to pay to get in. Would you mind to take my money? And he wanted to mark my hand. Now, I don't like those things on my hand. I don't like marks on me. I just don't want you to put anything on me. And, you know, I was born with white skin, and I would like to have a tan, but I really don't want anything else on there. And he insisted that he mark my hand so that if I left to go for anything, they would put it under a little light, and then I could come back in for free again. And it was $2. I said, I'd rather pay the $2. He didn't care. And I gave him the $2, and he marked my hand. And he marked my hand, and he looked me in the eye. Right in the eyes. And he said, my dear, when I mark your hand, you're marked for life. Now, Mary Beth had just said to me, now, this guy and his wife had had some trouble a couple of years ago. And she said, but they're happily married today. She said, it's just wonderful. And I thought, well, now, that really sounded like a happily married man, doesn't it, to you? You know? And I just went right on my way. He was, you know, I'd had enough of that one. And later, I feel somebody behind me. You know, when you can know somebody's right there. And I turned around and he pecked me on the shoulder. He said, remember me? I'm the one that marked your hand. And I said, yes, I do. And he said, well, you don't seem very happy to see me. And I said, well, you know, I really normally don't flirt with or have much to do with married men. And he said, I'm not a married man. And I said, oh. And he said, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm living here temporarily. And he said, well, me too. He said, but why are you living here temporarily? And I said, well, you're a little personal. And he said, well, why are you living here temporarily? And I said, well, if you must know, I went through a divorce not long ago. And he said, well, me too. And I went, oh, well, Mary Beth thought you were happily married. And he said, I haven't seen her in 2 years. You know, that either one mentioned at that moment that when they last time they'd seen each other was in a meeting of AA. But Mary Beth's drinking beer out of the back of her trunk. So obviously it didn't stick. You know, she didn't quite make the program. And so he said, well, when did you separate from your husband? And I said, a year ago in March. And he said, me too. And he said, well, when was your divorce final? And I said, last September. And he said, me too. And, you know, I didn't know then that the way you could tell an alcoholic man if he was lying was because his mouth was moving. But, you know. But later, y'all told me that after I got here, you know. But that was really the truth. He was really telling me the truth. And he said, well, he said, why did you get a divorce? And I said, this is it. This is where we stop, right here. I said, this is very, very personal. And he said, why did you get a divorce? He said, he was a very good salesman. if you wanted a house, or even if you didn't want a house, if you came close to him, you ended up with a house. He was a real. And so anyway, I said, well, if you must know. And I looked to see if anybody was listening, and they didn't appear to be. And I said, I was married to an alcoholic. And he went, me too! And he started banging himself on the chest and jumping up and down like a monkey. And I'm thinking, oh my God, now this is what I saw. The band stopped on both ends. Everybody turned and looked. This is the way it felt. There's a difference in feeling and reality. And then I said, you were married to an alcoholic woman? I didn't know there was such a thing. And he said, no, I am an alcoholic. Oh, and he's banging himself on the chest, and he's still jumping up and down. And I just know he is. And he's screaming, and everybody in Whitney's going to know it. And my parents are sort of the pillars of this little community, and this is just not okay. And I said, well, it was nice to meet you. Goodbye. And he said, I turned as white as a sheet. He said, I thought you were going to faint. And he said, Precious. And I felt so funny because my family called me Precious. And our really, really close friends called me Precious. And just all of a sudden he came out with that. And he said, Precious, what you need is a dry one, a sober one. And I said, I don't need anything. Thank you. And I really don't want to talk to you anymore. And I wish you'd just go away and leave me alone. And he said, no, no, no. He said, we need to talk. I said, but you're not drinking. And he said, I don't drink. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now everybody in Whitney knows. All 1,800 or 30,000 of them that were there. And I'm thinking, my God, I guess that's a place you can go and drink. Nobody tells. I mean, you know. I mean, what else would Alcoholics Anonymous do, you know? I never heard of it. And you know, God. And he wanted me to, you know, and he said, why don't you and I go to dinner tomorrow night? And then we'll go to a meeting. And I thought, well, now, isn't that exciting? And I said, a meeting of what? And he said, a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, it's a great speaker, and you're going to love everybody, and it's going to be a great time. And I was going to a Baylor UT football game with my attorney. And I said, well, I have a date. And he said, well, who's it with? And I said, well, I didn't know the word boundaries then, but trust me, he had none. And I said, well, it's none of your business. And he said, well, who is it? I thought, Christ, he'll call him up and cancel it or something, you know. And I said, well, if you must know, it's my attorney. And he said, your divorce attorney? And I said, well, yes, but I'm divorced. So he said, well, I think that's a conflict of interest. I said, I don't think that's any of your business. I said, anyway, he's a senator. He said, well, I don't care if he's the president, you know. And then the Belinsky thing came along a little late, you know. Anyway. And so the Monica whatever thing, you know. So he said, well, why don't you just break it? I said, why would I break it? He said, what are you going to do? I said, well, actually, we're going to a Texas football game. And he said, who are they playing? And I said, Baylor. And I said, why? And he said, we'll have a lot more fun. Why don't you just break it? And I said, well, I can't. And I said, he's a senator. He said, well, you said that, but it doesn't matter. And I said, well, I don't think I can do that. And he said, yes, you can. It's just a matter of picking up the phone and calling him and say something came up. And what's really funny is Buddy had called that afternoon, the attorney, and we'd had the date planned for a few weeks, but he had called and he had said, they have asked me to be the marshal for the parade tomorrow. And I'm going to be, you know, in one of those convertible things, and I'd like for you to sit with me in the convertible. Right. I'm going to sit with him in a convertible in Whitney, Texas, where everybody in God's country knows my... And I went, no, thank you. I said, are you nuts? I said, Buddy, I said, thank you, but no thank you. And he said, I don't understand why. And I said, first of all, it isn't appropriate. And my parents are appropriate people. And it's just not okay. And I said, I will see you after the parade. And he said, okay. Well, meet me before the parade, and we'll figure out where to meet afterwards. And I said, okay. So we already knew where we were going to meet. And so Don says to me, well, why don't you think about it tonight? And then tomorrow I'll see you at the parade. You are coming, right? And I said, well, yes. And he said, well, I'll see you at the parade. And I said, well, how will you find me? He said, oh, I'll find you. Don't worry about that. And I said, okay. But I can assure you that I'm not breaking my day. But when I saw Buddy, and he said, now we can meet over so-and-so, I said to him, Buddy, would you be upset if I told you that something had sort of come up personally and that I really couldn't make the football game tonight? And he went, no, of course not. Now, we were going to sit on the Baylor side. We were going to kill them, which we did. And I was going to be over there with those go Bears, you know, and I'm a hook 'em horns, you know. It's, I mean, you all don't understand this, but Texas is football. You know, we live it, we breathe it, we bleed it, just like Ohio State does, you know. I mean, I feel like I'm back in Texas with Ohio State, you know, because it's that way, and my kids are Ohio State people, so, and all their neighbors and friends, and so I feel like I'm home with that one. And Buddy said, no, that's, I understand, it's okay. And so, in a little, and I thought, did I really say that? I mean, I didn't intend to break that date. And so, appears Don Maloney 2 minutes later, and he said, have you decided, did you break the date? And I looked at him and I said, as a matter of fact, I did. And he went, well, good. And so we go to this restaurant with a nice little steakhouse, and I eat what I want. And then he says, is it not good? Would you like me to send it back? And I went, no, it's fine. And he said, no, but you're not eating it. It's not. And I looked at him and I said, did your mother make you clean your plate? And he said, yes. And I said, mine didn't. Get over it. You know? And we went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And a guy named Jesse Cummings stood up and told his story. And Jesse's been dead now for many years. But he talked about his wife, and he called her the old lady. And he talked about he had spoken to a women's group at a church, and they had asked him to come and talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he talked about that there was a line in the Bible that talked about the man that slept with woman that had drank would get the itch or some such nonsense. And this woman there that was about 80 years old came up to him afterwards and she said, young man, I consider myself a Bible scholar and I've read the Bible many times from front cover to back cover and I've never seen anything like that in my Bible. And he said, do you have it with you? And she said, of course I do. And she reached over and handed it to him. And he said, do you have a pen? And he said, yes. He said, where would you like me to put it? And I thought, my God, they're sacrilegious too, you know. And it was gray, and then I knew why it was anonymous, because you couldn't see anybody further than this, because there was so much smoke they were. I mean, it makes you girls out there smoking look like child's play, you know. But anyway. So I started going to open AA meetings with him, and I got to hurry. And I was going to open AA speaker meetings with him on Saturday night. And so Billy and Jerry and Mike and Gail and all these people would come from Dallas on the lake to the lake for the weekend. So they all assumed, you know what happens when we assume, it doesn't work out very well. And they assumed, because I was going to open AA meetings, that I was probably going to Al-Anon meetings during the week. Not true. I had joined the last auxiliary I ever intended to. And I wasn't going to join another. And it was, you know, I was used to country clubs and officers clubs and things. And I know that if you break up and, you know, it's your club, well, it was his club, then you leave. You know, it's just that's the way it is. And so I didn't want to get involved with the auxiliary and then us break up. It was strictly a, you know, just a friendly relationship. And I didn't want to embarrass him by being at the same club or anything, you know. And I had no intention of going to your auxiliary, to their auxiliaries. And they called them Alanoids, Alanon, Alasomethings, and I didn't want that. And Don would come to the house sometimes, and he would leave these little pamphlets. And I'm very funny because I don't use paper anything. I don't use paper napkins. I don't use paper, very few paper towels, you know, and I don't use paper plates or anything. And so we always had linen napkins and things like this when we were there, and I would hand him a coaster, just a nice linen napkin to put his drink on, and then he'd bring these tacky little pamphlet things, and I thought, is he using those for coasters, and then he's leaving them at the house? So I just pitch them. I didn't even look at them, you know, and I thought it was kind of tacky that he would leave it and not throw it in the trash before he left. But anyway, we went to my first conference. My first conference was the Brazos Riverside Conference. And several of the people that are here have spoken at the Brazos Riverside Conference and have been there several times. And it was at Lake Whitney, and I'd gone to camp there as a kid and hated it. And it was a Baptist encampment. And I said to him, no, I'm not going. It's terrible. I went there as a kid. And he said, no. He said, we don't go out and stay in the dorms or anything. We'll just go home at night. And then, you know, I'll pick you up the next morning and we'll go back. And I said, well, I'll go to one and we'll see. And so I went, and it was a great conference. And Sally and Keith were speaking that weekend, and Bob and Linda were there. And people that just became my heroes and that I loved and adored, you know. Beverly R. from Fort Worth was introducing Sally, who was going to be the Al-Anon speaker. And she said that when Buddy had gotten sober, she told him she wasn't going to be one of those alcoholettes. And so when they went to the conference, they had blue badges and red badges. That was before double winners. Or dual, whatever you call yourselves. Said, so are you an AA or an Al-Anon? She said, neither. I'm a visitor. I want a different color badge. I want it to say Beverly R. Visitor. In big letters, visitor. And they said, we understand you're a visitor. And I was sitting on the front row, and there was Bob and Marcy and me and Don and Billy and Jerry and Mike. And Gail. I know where we were sitting. I almost know what I had on, but not really, but Gail could tell us. And Marcy reached over, and she patted me on the knee, and I had fallen in love with Bob and Marcy. Bob and Marcy White were just the Chuck and Elsa of the Southwest. They really were. And Marcy reached over, and she patted me on the knee, and she said, Precious, that's what you are. You're a visitor. She said, you're going to open AA speaker meetings, but we'd love to have you come to an Al-Anon meeting sometime. And Don was doing the steps in Dallas at the Alpha Group. And by the way, Polly and Dave got sober in Dallas. I don't know if you guys know that, but so they're really Texans too, Texas sobriety. And so anyway, Don had been doing these steps, and he had asked me every week, would you like to ride to Dallas on Monday night? I'm doing the steps, and we'll have dinner and then do this. And I'd go, no, thank you, I appreciate it, but I'll pass. And so Sally had told my story. And y'all were laughing, and tears were running down my face. Because it was my life story. And they say, if you wait long enough, you'll hear your story. And I did. And so I said to Don, are you going on Monday night to Dallas to do the steps? And he said, yes, I'm finishing up, actually, Monday night. And I said, do they have an Al-Anon meeting at the same time? And he said, yes. And I said, is that invitation still open? And he said, yes. And so I went. And Billy J. from Dallas, who just lost her husband, my husband's sponsor, 3 months after Don passed away, was leading that meeting. And you know the time in our meeting, it says, is there anyone here for their first meeting? Or is this your first Alpha Al-Anon meeting? You know, are you a newcomer or are you a visitor here? And I had to raise my hand, you know, and it weighed 10,000 pounds. And she thought I meant it was just my first ever Dallas Alpha Al-Anon meeting. And she said, not you, Precious, you're one of us. And it touched me in a place. And Gail was in that meeting. Marvel, all these people that, you know, were in that meeting that I still love and adore. And they talked about sponsorship. And that if you were going to make it in the program of Al-Anon, or AA, that if you didn't have a sponsor, that, you know, you were just going around the edges. You know, why would you want to go to a buffet and only eat cauliflower and greens or something like that? You know, why would you want to do that if you have this beautiful buffet in front of you and you can only eat two nasty vegetables? Why would you want to do that? Why? And yet God has set this beautiful buffet in front of you and you don't want the whole thing and it's for free? Why would you not do that? Well, that's what it's about. This that we are at this weekend is fellowship. We are fellowshipping. We are in a meeting. We are in a convention. That's called fellowship. But recovery is working the steps with a sponsor. And if you don't have one, you need one. And we do step study groups in Texas. And we do them with AA and Al-Anon women together. And so one of the things that we added to it, as the first thing, is sponsorship. Do you have a sponsor? Do they know they're your sponsor? Have you ever said to that person, would you be my sponsor? Do you remember that your sponsor has a separate life other than just you? When you call her, do you go, or do you say, is this a good time for you, or are you busy? Or if it's not a good time, could I call you at a certain time later, or could you call me back when you're free? They have lives other than just us. But, you know, we don't know that because it's all about us. You know, and so we lived in Hawaii, and we got to help, or we started the Big Island Bash, and they just celebrated 25 years. And then we moved to Colorado for the summers, and Aspen had a conference that was absolutely dying, and it was called The Joy of Living. And and it was dying. They had like 60 people there, and, you know, and it was their 7th year. And, of course, Maloney jumped right in and said, why don't you let me get you some speakers, you know. And so we had Polly and Dave. We had Charlie and them. We've got Billy and, you know, we've got, you know, the speakers. Bob and Lynn, we get the speakers. And I'm telling you, today that conference is just overflowing, you know. And we got to have a part in that and get to be a part of it. And then we had a home in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico for the winters. And so they had a conference that was dying, and it was probably 6 or 7 years old. And, you know, they had 40 people there. And so Don said, who picks the speakers? You know, and they said, well, just somebody that wants, they call their friends in the mainland or the U.S. that go to meetings and say, would you like to come down for a free weekend and speak? You know, and they've never been behind a podium or told their story in their own home group, you know. And Don said, why don't you let me take care of being let me get on that committee, you know. And the next year we had 200 people, and now they have 400 people, you know. And it's alive and well, and a lot of the people that are on this front row and not on the front row have been there and come and spoken. And if you see Polly running around in her little black thing, her little black and white flowy thing, well, that's where it came from. So anyway, life is good. I jumped into Al-Anon just like I did everything else, with all fours, you know. And I called Marcy the very next morning and I said, Marcy, can I have a minute more? Lee, am I okay? And I called Marcy and I said, Marcy, I went to my first Al-Anon meeting last night. She said, well, Precious, I was there and I didn't see you. Now, you can't go to an Al-Anon meeting at Lake Whitney and not be seen, because there may be 10 or 20 people at the most there. And she said, I don't quite understand. And I said, well, I was at the Alpha meeting. I was with Don. And I said, but they said I needed a sponsor. And I figure I want to start at the top. My parents taught me, start at the top. You know, why start at the bottom on anything? You know, just go for it all. You know, why would you want a little when you can just have it all? And so I jumped in, and Marcy, I said, would you be my sponsor? She said, Precious, I'd love to be your sponsor. I've been waiting on you. We've all been waiting on you. And she said, but we will work the steps as if your life depends on it. Well, guess what? If your life doesn't depend on it today, I promise you, if you are sitting in this room, there will come a time that your life will depend on you have working the steps. And it'll be too dang late if you haven't already done it. So work the steps. Listen to these women this weekend. If you don't have a sponsor, go home and get one. If you have one that you don't use as a sponsor, or she doesn't have a sponsor needs a sponsor who's got a sponsor, you know? And you know, and sometimes you'll hear of these people say, oh, I'm married to an Al-Anon, or yeah, I'm a double winner. And I go, oh, you go to Al-Anon too? Well, I've gone to a couple of meetings. So let me tell you what an Al-Anon is. You may not like this, but I can be on your first column. I don't care. It's just like Katie said, it's not my deal. And, you know, an Al-Anon is somebody that goes to meetings on a regular basis. They have a sponsor. They go to meetings. They work the steps as if their lives depend on it. They sponsor people. And when they need help, they raise their hands. You know, my husband said his parents made him sit on the front row. My mother and daddy made me sit on the front row. So where do we always sit? On the front row. You know, he said, if you're sitting on the front row, you can't see everything that's happening in front of you. You know, if I said, but I really would have always wanted to sit on the back. And he said, what happens when you sit on the back sometimes is you see what all is going on in the room, sort of like the texting thing we've been talking about. It's disruptive. So he said, sit on the front row and you can't miss what the speaker has to say. You know, so if you're in a relationship and you're an alcoholic and that relationship is having problems, Alcoholics Anonymous, if you do it by the way, an AA woman said this to me once. She said, my program of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that it has every answer to my life that I need. Every answer is in that big book. And it very well may be for you. It very well may be for you. And if so, I congratulate you. But there are a lot of you that every answer isn't there. And I would invite you to try an Al-Anon meeting sometime. We don't bite. We don't have fleas. We sometimes run around like butterflies, or they think we do. And, you know, but we have a lot of fun. But we don't laugh as much as you all do. But we do in the groups that I go to. Because, by God, if there's not laughter in a group, there's not recovery. And I want to thank you for having me. And I love you.